Welcome to the Everyday Bow Hunter. I'm your host, Mike Manley, retired Green Beret turned bow hunter, joined by my brother, Dan Zima. We're here to share tips, stories, and talk gear, all from our unique points of view. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned bow hunter, I think you're gonna like it. So let's go. Hey everyone, this is episode 13. I'm Mike, he's Dan, and you're ready to rock here, Dan. Lucky 13.
We're back.
You have been kind of slow on the roll here. It was kind of busy, you know, real life gets in the way kind of stuff. The end of the archery season that we said on the last podcast, we had our ups and downs. We're kind of talk about that today. Some season review stuff, good, bad, ugly, and some funny stories as well. I got them, and we're going to start off like we do a lot of times with listener questions. I just have one listener question that I want to follow up on, and it's a question from, oh my goodness, I can't think, Mark from Michigan. So anyway, Mark asked, if I butcher the question, I apologize. He basically asked, he said, I have a situation where I want to hunt and I'm trying to figure out how to hunt the thermals in the area. And he said, I really don't understand thermals. And I said, the biggest thing to do when you're going to hunt any spot, first thing is understand where the winds are coming from. If you know where the winds and the winds work for that spot, then you should be good. Right. So understand that the winds are good for the spot. First off, that's your first check. Now, if you're on a hill and you are, you know, in an area that, you know, you're used to thermals rising in the morning and dropping in the evening, et cetera, like they normally do, it's a good idea to get in, know if that spot, if you're say you're on a bench, right? And your wind is good, you're downwind from the spot where you expect to see the deer. Then expect the thermals to drop in the morning, you probably want to hunt below that spot, right? But you have to be cognizant of the fact that in the morning, a lot of times the thermals can be really off. So you need to make sure you're dropping milkweed to know if they're dropping, you know, still, because a lot of times they can drop and continue to drop to like 9 o'clock in the morning. And, even later sometimes, depending on the temperature change, where they could really just kind of stay the same because the temperature doesn't change a lot. So especially this time of year.
All right. So here's maybe a different angle on it. Your thermal is your, let's say your scent, but within temperature. Okay. So the colder the temperature and with that wind in direct correlation, it's going to pull that scent downwards. Okay. The warmer, it's going to pull the scent up within that wind that's coming. Let's say it's coming right in your face. So the warmer it is, that your scent cone is going to go up. The colder it is, your scent cone is going to go down. So that's kind of in layman's term of what we're talking about. Do you agree?
Well, so if for my example is this, if you know if the thermals are dropping past the spot that you want to hunt, obviously hunt below that. If you can't hunt below it, then don't hunt the spot.
Yeah.
Right. And same thing, vice versa. A lot of times, like this season, I think I talked about it in one of the episodes. I went up the mountain and I sat about 500 yards from where I wanted to hunt, waiting for the thermals to drop in the evening. And it was like 4:30 till they dropped. And I then snuck in to my spot, got up in the tree. And that's how I hunted that spot before, because the thermals are continuing to go up the mountain and go up the mountain, and I couldn't hunt it, even though the winds were kind of pushing that in the direction that I was walking down the bench I was on. When the thermals are going like that, you get a lot of swirling winds, and they'll push them, and then you end up having your scent all over the place, and it could pollute an area. And since you never really know exactly where a deer's coming from sometimes, unless you really have a great pattern. It's to me, sometimes you just have to say either I'm not going to hunt there, or and pull out, or be tactical and don't go in right away. So it's different ways to look at it, but that's the way I look at it, Dan.
Yeah. I just like to simplify it. It's as the weather gets warmer, it's going to push your thermal up. As the weather cools down, it's going to pull it down.
Now I'll tell you, one of the best times to hunt and not have to worry about thermals is if you have a rain coming in, if there's some light rain and you're hunting in the light rain, a lot of times and there's not a lot of wind, say, those time frames in between where it's just light rain and stuff, and that wind just stops, your thermals, you're just going to drop to the ground right where you're at, and it's going to be nothing. And it's a great time to take advantage of thermals. But I digress. So we're talking about the kind of season in review. And Dan, you had kind of funny story that started right in the beginning of the season. Dad, you want to dive into that?
Yeah, so it was like one of the first hunts. I had a spot picked out, and I thought to myself, it gets hunted pretty good sometimes, so I'm going to get there as early as possible. So I get there, I get all set up, and I could actually see the cars down on the stone road below me. And one car comes in, pulls into the parking area, sees my vehicle, and they take off. Second car pulls in, sees my vehicle, and they take off, going back the way they came in from. Now the third vehicle comes in. He gets pissed off and starts blowing his horn as to blow my spot up. Because we're at this spot, traditionally, you're not but, 75, not even 100 yards off the road. Mm-hmm. It's just a corridor for him. And traditionally, and it actually happened this year. It's in the story where I went back there and hit the doe where my fletching came off my arrow and it bounced off her shoulder. But yeah, some joker decides he's going to blow my spot up by blowing the horn. I must have really pissed him off. But here's here's how I look at it. Get out of bed earlier, dude. Stop sitting there eating breakfast and drinking coffee. Get out of the porta pot and get up there and get into your spot. I got there before you. That's just how it first come, first serve. That's public land hunting.
That's public land hunting. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Like, how in the hell was I supposed to know you wanted to hunt that day? I don't even know you, but it is what it is.
We have a lot of these spots, and you can go 2 weeks and nobody hunts there, but then the day you want to hunt there, somebody wants to act stupid. So that's just public land stuff.
You fast forward 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it was, and Dad comes out from out the mountain. And he comes, he says, "You ain't gonna believe this. Some guy was blowing the horn at me." And I was like, "What did he see?" He says, "No, I was down in my spot, and all I could hear is this horn blowing." And I thought, and so I was like, "I wonder if it's the same guy." Now, Dad's, he's a conspiracy theorist. I wonder if it's an animal activist. He's out there, which, hey, we don't know. It very well could be. Mm-hmm. So fast forward here to what was it? Pretty much the last weekend we were up. It happened to you.
Yeah. I was down probably in a similar situation, not even close to where you were hunting before, but I was in one of those spots where we know it's a great rut funnel down. I was probably 150 yards from the road. So not too far. I could see the road from up in my tree at different places. There's pockets of trees and stuff you can see through. And it was like, 8 o'clock. Or was it earlier? No, it was like 8 o'clock. And I see this van coming down through. And as soon as he got right parallel to where I was at, and now my car is actually down from where he was at, where he could probably see it at that point, it's probably another 200 yards to my car, and or more, maybe 300, it doesn't matter. But boom, he lays on the horn, and he's on the horn for the whole way down. It's at least 10-15 seconds of solid horn the whole way down through. And I'm like, what do you think you're doing? The deer are not running off all of a sudden because of that. They're stopping and looking in that direction and saying, "What the heck is that?" Oh, they're gone. I don't have to worry about it. That's up on that road thing.
It would have been funny if a turkey would have gobbled because of the horn going off. I've actually had that happen. You blew a horn at a turkey and the thing gobbled at me. And then we laughed our butt off. We were at work when it happened, but That would have been kind of funny sitting there, God blowing his horn, and then turkey.
I don't get it. Yeah, you don't have anything better to do than that. Seriously,
that's just sore loser stuff right there. It's like, yeah, here I don't again, get there before me. How do you solve even... this issue? Get there before me, and guess what? You get the spot. That's pretty good.
We go to our spots early because we want to get in before the deer get there. You know,
and you know, people up where we hunt, there we got some crazy going on up there, and that kind of leads in probably to the very next segment, which is road hunting, that we wanted to talk about, cover. And I firsthand had a kind of crappy situation where the one spot I call shortstop. So the first time I ever hunted this spot, I got turned around and didn't realize I was this close to the road, but I ended up killing a really big doe there. And so I kept going back a couple seasons later. And at one point I'm in my blind, and this was before they made it that you had to have orange around your blind or around the tree right at your blind. And I'm down there hunting, and these road hunters are coming up, and I look up and I can actually see a crossbow in the passenger seat, a guy holding it, and they're going very slow. And I'm sitting there thinking, dude, if I move wrong right now, they're going to think I'm an animal and shoot down my, this is freaking dangerous, man. Somebody's going to get killed. So I flipped my blind up real quick and I went, hey, what are you doing? You know, and I yell at the guy and they tore off. You could, you know, the stones kicking off the tires and they tore off, but I guess it embarrassed them. They were road hunting, but we have a major issue up at our cabin.
And it's not just one vehicle. You have multiple vehicles going up and down that valley, you know, up and down the valley road there. Yeah. And it's
all times a day.
And I actually came out from doing a morning hunt, and I come out and I'm going to my car, and I'm nowhere near where I hunted. But there's a small truck with a cap on it parked next to my car. And as I get up there, that guy in the driver's seat's like, hey, man, let me holler at you. And I said, like, okay. And I walked over, and he's like, hey, what you seeing out there? Blah, blah, blah. But the first thing I notice is that the passenger, like you said, Dan, is sitting there with a crossbow in his lap loaded. You know, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And has this ever actually worked?
Yeah. Not only is it illegal, but it's unethical.
Is it it's a waste of time. How do you, if you want to hunt, if you're going to do meat hunting, you know, go down in an area where there's a ton of doe and shoot some doe. Mm-hmm. But I get that. If you want to feed your family, whatever, that's fine. But you know what? Stop being freaking lazy. Because neither of these guys were disabled. You know, you could tell they were not they weren't rock stars as far as being in shape, but they weren't, they were definitely capable of going out in the woods and hunting.
Yeah.
And so to me, that is just the epitome of the hunter that the stereotype of hunters that people have, of the negative side of things,
yeah,
that we don't need, you know? Yeah. And if you do it, or you know somebody that does it, you need to tell them, you know what? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on. Seriously. Now,
Game Commission, don't take this the wrong way. We don't want to bring, not that we're doing anything wrong, we're doing everything by the book, but we don't want the attention of the Game Commission and have a target on our back where we're watched all the time. They're actively coming in, ruining your hunts because they think you're up to something. But there's a line that these people are crossing here. And I feel like my life's in danger because a lot of times my back is to the road. You know what I mean? And these guys are driving by with a weapon that's technically pointed at me. And I don't like that.
And it doesn't even matter if you're hunting close to the road, because you've got to walk out.
Yeah.
And archer season, we're all in camo. We're not wearing orange, you know? So when you do,
it just takes one knucklehead thinking you're an animal and
shoot,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's infuriating to me, the idiocy of it.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is I would love to get, you know, word out to the Game Commission. Like, you guys got to do something about this. This is beyond ridiculous. Because
it's totally obvious to us every single day we hunt on the weekends. And it's more of a weekend thing.
Yeah.
You tell me you can't see this. All you have to do is sit there for an hour and it's just up and down the road.
Yeah. But
one of the things that Game Commission has been doing, we saw this, they hanging cameras around,
yeah,
watching for people that are poaching and stuff like that. So yeah, they've, yeah,
They definitely have cameras out now, which is, I'm okay with. Again, we're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
We're doing everything by the book. So, you know, more power to them.
Yeah, they know certain individuals that are acting up, so they're watching them.
Yeah.
But I literally haven't talked to anybody from the game commission or DCNR or anybody me and Dad freaking stopped and talked to a DCNR guy out of season, I think it was.
Yeah.
2 years ago, but during season, I haven't talked to one in a couple of years.
Yeah. So. I've only spoken to, I think two, one here, it was actually in York County. And then up there once, and I had set my crossbow down on the ground and he pulled up and he was just like, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know, good job putting that on the ground and not leaning it up against your vehicle. 'Cause the moment you would have leaned that up against your vehicle, that's a violation." I was like, "Oh, seriously." And he kind of
didn't know
on it, but he was really cool about it, you know? And I think our buddy Jevin, I think the same thing happened to him too. And with the same conversation that was had, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're looking at. That's like their first look. Oh, he did this. That's my way in to have a conversation with this guy or girl, whatever, you know, it's.
I think the only other time that we did together, Dan, was it you was with, I think it was you was with me, saw that 4 point was on the back of that. That one's car, their truck. Yep. Yeah. They had truck. A 4 point on there. Yeah. So, which I'm still kind of miffed about that. So if somebody says, "Hey, I shot a deer, you know, it was not as big as I thought it was, you know, then let them keep the deer, take their tag. Don't take the deer."
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, I digress. So Dan, for this season, we kind of talked about it last episode, but we didn't really go into detail. We kind of were more general.
Okay.
But this season in review, if you take your kind of, you know, whole season in a nutshell, tell the best thing you got out of it, the worst thing you got out of it, and the biggest lesson that you're going to take in the next season. And it can be multiple things, but.
Okay. Well, all right, we'll start out with the best thing. The best thing is it kind of alludes right into or goes into what you said about lessons. I learned a lot of lessons, but I learned a lot about the exact discussion we had in the beginning. It was the first year that I was super conscious about thermals and hunting that specifically and utilizing e-scouting into hunts. Put me in some seriously good situations this season. And that I'm grateful for, that I adopted those habits. Now, as far as the negative, was lessons learned. Patience, patience, patience. That it kind of amounts to everything. Knowing your yardage correctly, seeing twigs that are there that you weren't really paying attention to, that you need to be paying attention to, because it results in a missed animal. Luckily for the buck out in Bedford, I did not wound that animal. Just attention to detail. That, you know, big things for me. I learned a lot, and it's things that, you know, next season, or actually in late season this year, because I didn't get to utilize any of my tags. Late season, it's going to be slowing down my mental, my thinking, the way that I do things, and processing the information as it comes a lot better. And hopefully that leads to some success here in late season.
All right.
But lessons learned, patience, patience, patience. And I said this in the last episode, it's not how long you're patient for, it's how you act while being patient. Act accordingly, you know, so there's that.
I definitely have moments where my lack of patience could be a problem.
Yeah.
I think that as far as me on the high side of things, I got one of my target bucks window. I was 5 yards from him, just not in daylight. They got me when I was, you know, my bow was on the ground. So as I was climbing the tree. So anyway, I lost out on that, which is really disappointing. I guess overall, the thing that I take away from this is that the extra, you know, the 80-20 rule we talked about before the season, 80% scouting, 20% hunting. I think I was probably 60-40. Okay. I think biggest thing for me taking into next season is to push more on that, to get to that 80% and not be so focused on getting in the tree as focused on put myself in the right position. Now, that being said, most of the time I was putting myself in a position where I saw deer. I had, you know, a couple decent deer around me. The 6 point, the first end of the first week, I had another 6 point there. The last week, not second to last week of archery, and I had a couple. It was like 4 point and spike year for some reason. I saw so many 4 points and spikes. That's it. Hey, promise for the future, right?
Hey, you know what? Mine was the polar opposite. Everything I saw had headgear on it that was like,
yeah. Anyway. I just had that one monster. So, all the other deer were a little bit smaller, but. The fact is I have a lot of intel to carry me into next season, and I need to push myself to focus on the sign. I literally found some areas where I say that the biggest thing you can take away from deer hunting specifically is there's all these different phases during the season.
Yeah.
And their movements are different.
Mm-hmm.
And where they're at is different.
Absolutely.
And if you can really narrow down the area you're hunting and understand that I need to be in X spot on X date or X week, then you're really lined up. And I think from this season and last season, I've really narrowed down a bunch of spots that is going to get me, put me in a better position next year, because I've really learned the times that they're there. I mean, I lied earlier. I did see that 1 8-point that I call medium. And,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had put myself in the spot in the morning, near where their bedding area is, and I don't even know how I even turned around to see him, because he wasn't quite directly behind me, but it was over my right shoulder, and I turned and looked, and he was going up the mountain on a trail I hadn't seen before, and I ended up scouting up that hill, and finding just a monster amount of sign, and I honestly think I ended up blowing that area out. And yeah, because I went up there in the afternoon and the winds were going straight up the hill, and I should have backed out, and I didn't. So that's probably one of my bigger mistakes, is I didn't listen to myself and I didn't back out when I should have.
You did say in the beginning of this season you wanted to be more aggressive, but with being more aggressive, there are some downsides to that, like blowing a spot out. And yeah, you were more aggressive, but I don't think it worked in your favor in this instance.
Yep. But I learned a lot about the particular area, and I hope that big guy made it through.
Yeah.
But speaking of which, let's see another. Oh, here's another lesson learned, Dan. Don't lose your rangefinder. Don't lose it. Don't lose it in the woods or wherever I lost it. I lost it somewhere. Yeah. But I'm happy at least I have another rangefinder. I still have not got my bow fixed. I still need to go to Extreme Archery and get my bow fixed. I have
new bow. I mean,
I got to get this one fixed so that I can.
You do?
You know, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll, wow. You know what? I will go in and I'll ask them, you know, about the trade-in. You know, they might say, "Well, if you pay to fix this one, or we'll take that off the top."
If it was me, if it was up to me, honest to God, this is my opinion, fix it and have it as a backup. So if something happens in the middle of the season, you're not dead in the water. You have a backup bow that's kind of capable.
It's just noisy. So if you didn't catch a previous episode, my right before hunting a full week up at our camp at that second week of November, my bow kind of blew up on me. And luckily, the craziest thing is I was able to use Dan's Elite that was sitting up there at our camp. It didn't have to change anything, which is a crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. You know,
draw length was the same, and we are brothers. But and I didn't have to change the sight. It was perfect. I literally was hitting center mass 20 yards. And I'm like, what the hell? That's awesome. But now my bow needs either replaced or fixed. And I'm leaning towards replaced because I just haven't been
happy.
With the first, you know, year there, which I didn't get to shoot it a ton, but I did shoot it pretty good the summer before. And it was pretty good. That bear, this is a bear. It was a 2022 Bear Alaskan, and it worked pretty good. And the thing that you never really realize until you're in the tree and you're drawing on deer is that noise.
You know, the drawing.
Of the drawing.
Yeah.
And it was noisy. Mm-hmm. I was literally like struggling and making myself go so super slow on the draw. Then I get Dan's Elite and it's like, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah. I lucked out with that bow. It's a hell of a bow. That Elite. Yeah. I absolutely love it. I love shooting it. And I implore you to look in their direction when it's time to buy a bow, because I guarantee you, you're not going to be disappointed. Yeah. But you've got to know what you're comfortable with, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, I have to get a bow. So that's it. Is what it is. Sorry, Bear. Sorry. The Alaskan just didn't work out for me. Sorry. I'm sure you have other bows that are good.
Yeah.
So it just didn't work out for me. So anyway, the other thing that we talked about, Dan, is this weekend.
Yeah.
So it's rifle season in Pennsylvania. And this is the last week of it. There's only 2 weeks. And we traditionally go to our camp and do a end of year party type thing.
Yeah.
Yes. I guess not party type thing. It's a party. But we, in the morning, we'll go out and put some drives on. And last year I actually got a doe out of it. So
he did the eye shot.
Yeah. I shot her in the eye.
this is a family tradition. We've been doing this with another family or several other families, and it hops cabins every year. So it goes like in a 3-year cycle, you know, and, you know, ultimately it's at our camp and then their camp and then their camp. But we've been doing this for 25, probably plus, you know, me personally, only like 17 years, but Dad and the other ones, they started the tradition a long time ago. So
mainly 13 years.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun and we look forward to it. It's a great time. Everybody tells their hunting stories, you know, from this season or past seasons or whatever. And, you know, drink a couple beers, eat some good food.
It's always a good time.
Our friend Mick makes this chili that everybody just tears up, and then it tears us up, and then our outhouse gets tore up, and it's a whole vicious circle. But
Mick, you need to make better chili. I'm just kidding. But we have a great time. But you guys are going up Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm going to go up Thursday night. I'm going to get some hunting in Friday. I'd like to at least get my doe tag filled. And you know, if I get a buck, I get a buck, but you know, that'll save a tag for late season archery. But hey, if I don't get anything, at least I'm getting out in the woods and, you know, getting some fresh air. So that's all that matters.
I told my wife tonight that I'm probably going to ask to see if I can get off Friday and go up Thursday night with you guys too.
Yeah, please do.
Cause I'd love to get out in the woods. You know, I love getting out in the woods regardless. I don't care if I get an animal. I just love being in the woods.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to head straight from work, get up there, go to the grocery store, go to the beer distributor, and get everything, you know, to get the water on, because we winterized, or Dad winterized, sorry. And so I got to get everything ready, prepped, and get some heat on in that place, get it ready for this weekend's festivities.
Yep. Luckily, it's not going to be too bad this weekend.
No. I saw mid 50s on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, Saturday's going to be pretty nice.
Which I just got that new Huntworth.
Talk about that, Dan.
What's the
Saskatoon?
Saskatoon. I wanted to say Saskatchewan, but Mike, throughout the season, he had gotten some of the Saskatoon gear through Huntworth. And a buddy of ours kind of gives us crap about it. You know, it's like the Walmart brand. But I'll tell you what, we put it up against Stratus from Sitka and kind of put them up against each other. Now, I will say this. Sitka, the fit is just, it's different.
The overall quality. The quality is better. Yeah. The zippers, the attention to detail, all that stuff.
Just like where it cuts in on you, it fits nicer. Where the, you know, the
more tapered in the arms and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Huntworth's a little baggy here and there, but I'll tell you what, the stuff is nice. I am thirst for the price. It's less than half of what Sitka is.
You can get the pants and the jacket for the price you pay for one of a jacket or the pants for, you know, well, your bibs, the Sitka bibs are like $359 retail.
Yeah.
And so is the jacket.
Yeah.
The pants are like $309. So if you buy any of that stuff, get it on sale. But I got the
coat and the pants for $278. That's a no brainer. And it's got that heat boost in it. So it's more for a later season, which I'm okay with. I know you spend all that money only to wear it.
It's not their late season gear though either. They have a heavier one.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to wear that. Not where we are, but
The Matterhorn it's called. Just to give you a little point of reference, I tested three different kind of clothing systems. The Stratus from Sitka, Osseo Gear's Sherpa lined jacket and pants, and Huntworth Saskatoon. And I kept telling Dan, you know what? On the cold mornings that are really cold, I keep leaning towards the Saskatoon and the beanie. The heat boost beanie was really warm too. And I was kind of, you know, I said, when you keep just like, it started unconsciously. I was like, just like, oh, that's the warmest stuff. I'm going to wear that.
Yeah.
So it was super warm. I don't know about the heat boost technology and all that stuff, but it's definitely warm, and it's definitely warmer than the Stratus, and it's just a little bit warmer than the Osseo. So and really that's your quality line too. Stratus, highest quality, Osseo, kind of really close to Sitka. And then you have Huntworth. This is more of your budget option, but definitely if you're on a budget, there's nothing wrong with that stuff at all.
I'll tell you what, I'm impressed with it. I can't even lie. Like you put it on, it feels good. It wears good. I'm excited to get this stuff out in the field, man, because the quality is not that low. It's really,
it's windproof. It's got DWR protection and all that stuff. So I am actually looking forward to getting the Saskatoon vest because that's warmer. I have the Elkins vest, which is kind of like the Stratus.
Yeah.
It has the same, we looked at it, looked identical in the Stratus on the Elkins.
Right.
And so anyway, that's, I'm going to try to get that to test because I'm all of a sudden a vest guy.
Yeah, you say. I like the idea of that too, having your arms free, that mobility.
Arms free, having that, you know, being able to use your arms and keep stuff off there. Even with the Osseo, they actually have a late season vest now too. So I'm kind of.
So is it because you have those big muscles?
Yeah, that's exactly it, Tim. why beat around the bush?
When you're rolling around with guns like you got.
They're monsters.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I need to start flexing on the podcast. No, I'm not. Yeah. So if you're just listening to this, I'm not doing that. So anyway, so yeah, the clothing side of things, but you know, look forward to that. I don't really rifle hunt much, you know, I love archery hunting, bow hunting. That's why we ever do a bow hunter podcast. That's my love. And that's why we'll, you know, probably go out like Dan said in the late season. And that's something, you know, as far as late season hunting, you know, some things that one thing as far as late season hunting that I would hope for, you know, the number one thing they say for late season hunting, Dan, is because the deer are so depleted, you know, the bucks I should say are so depleted, and even the does from running and running and running and running, all that testosterone and chasing and going through the rut really wears them out. And even right now, a lot of the bucks are worn down and they're probably not, you know, they're probably not charging moving. Along, not moving a lot. So you got to get yourself near the food sources.
Yeah.
The food sources could be, you know, a lot of times you have the leftover acorns, the red oaks, especially since the red oaks drop like in late October, November timeframe. So they're probably the freshest acorns they have.
Well, I think the tale here is I think you need to hunt a little bit closer to bedding than you normally would in the early season and mid season. Well,
I think, as I think I said it once before, for late season, if you can pair up a good food source that's close to bedding, that's close to water,
yeah,
and a travel route, you're gonna set yourself up for success. That's you know, really good, you know, techniques for that. And a lot of times now, because of all the hunting pressure, the bedding is going to be where, you know, it's either going to be real low in the thickest of thickest,
yeah,
stuff, you know, in your marshes and stuff like that, or it's going to be at the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And I've found so much bedding at the top of the mountain. And I meant to ask you that.
Hmm.
So you guys were tracking that buck that you shot and the blood trail going up over the mountain. Did you ever run into any beds up there?
Just the bed that my deer laid in.
It's private land too.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention a whole lot, because I for those of you that have tracked deer, you kind of have tunnel vision at that point.
You're looking at the ground for blood.
Monofocused on one specific thing, and that's, you know, blood and a sign that your animal went through that, you know, area. But yeah, I'm not even gonna lie, I was not really paying attention to that, Mike. I was definitely tunnel vision.
So the one spot I hunted a lot that I was near, that one top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So what led me to that spot, I keep burping. What led me to that spot originally was, we had hiked out there and I went to the top and there was a bed there with a rub right next to it. And that made me say, huh, this is probably a late season bed here. It gets them up and away from the hunting pressure. It is really hard to get to, and it's super rocky. You know, nobody wants to walk up there. I think that, so that's, and then, our dad, dad and I, we walked the top of the mountain, quite a ways. And I think, oh my God, I don't know how many beds we hit. So they're really pushing up there in that later season. So,
Pressure does that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all that hunting pressure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I've really seen it on my camera. So on my cameras, the deer, every time I get a picture now, it seems like they're coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're up there. So I guess that's the biggest thing, Dan, is late season. Now the last thing I want to say about the late season is, what would really help us out is snow.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. That Huntworth gear, I'm looking forward to putting it to the test, because, you know, I mean, it starts the day after Christmas, so December 26th. I think it goes to January, 16th or something like that.
It's like the end of the second week of January or something like that.
So yeah, so you traditionally around here, it's pretty cold. I mean, I'm not looking forward to any wind because that makes it a lot colder when it's already cold, but that's going to put that gear to the test because it's windproof.
Yeah, it's got that windproofing in there, which now I'm also a windproof snob. I never had stuff that had windproofing in it now.
And what did I text you?
That stuff.
What I text you the other day, I think when the temperature goes below 45 degrees, that's when having windproof, because any inflection in the wind under 45 degrees, you really start to notice the wind, getting in you.
You know what? The second thing I learned just thinking about that right now, when it comes to your layers and stuff,
yeah,
I tested a couple base layers this season too, and I had two sets of base layers that did not wick my sweat away, and I shivered my ass off because of it. And I actually kept going back to a couple things. One, I had a lightweight merino that worked really well for it. I had that Kuyu Peloton 97 that Mom got me for Christmas last year, and that was excellent. I think that's the best item right there. And I didn't realize that people actually use that for long distance, ultralight hiking.
Yeah.
That's a big shirt for that. I didn't even know it till I was kind of researching it. But, and then the other thing was the Sitka Core lightweight hoodie. And I was thinking that was just like an early season thing, but that is great through the whole season as a base layer, and it wicks really well. It's like a synthetic. So anyway, I've now learned through all this testing that, one, I want a wicking base layer.
Yeah.
That actually wicks. And I never really cared about that, or thought about it, I should say. and I want something that's windproof.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm getting to be a gear snob, Dan.
No, it's lessons learned. You know what I mean? It's how do you know until you go through it kind of deal. Yeah. So it's, I'll tell you what, like for me, Merino wool, the socks, and actually I get them First Light gloves that are cut off the knuckles. They're Merino wool. They're literally the best pair of gloves I've ever had. I love them. But
oh yeah, those First Light gloves with the fingers off. Yeah,
they're awesome. But yeah, the socks, when you're in rubber boots, you don't realize how much your feet are sweating. So that right there is one of the most important things, is to have Merino wool. If you're wearing knee-high rubber boots, get yourself some Merino wool or alpaca. Both do the same thing. Get that moisture off your feet, put it to the exterior, get it out, you know. So
the alpaca, I think, is a little salty.
Yeah, but it's from my understanding, it's worth it and durable, you know. That's
so, hey, one piece of advice I could get, you know, I ended up getting two sets of Merino. I got a lightweight set that's really light, and then I got like a medium weight, and I got them off of Amazon, and I got, you know, they were like way cheaper. Like if you go to Sitka, you go to Kuyu or whatever, you know, and it doesn't matter. You go and buy those base layers from those companies, you're going to pay $100 or close to $100, depending on the item you're getting. They're on Amazon, 100% Merino wool, or even with a little bit of nylon in it to make it tougher.
Yeah.
And you can get, like, I think I paid 40, 45 for one, I end up getting two things together for $60 and that for the lightweight set. And then I think I paid around 70 for the two items, for the top and bottom for the midweight stuff.
Right.
You don't have to spend that much money and go, Amazon is your friend in that regard.
Well, I actually ran into a website. I think if I remember correctly, I hope I'm not wrong, I think it was called Merino Wool USA or something along that line. And
is it Merino Wool?
I think it is Merino Wool USA. And Merino Wool, actually, when I looked on it, a lot of their stuff is 90-10. When I say that's 90% Merino wool, 10% polyester or whatever. And yeah, I'll tell you what,
polyester or nylon. And the reason do that is because Merino wool is so fine that you can have it a short time and get holes in it right away.
Yeah.
So if you get holes in your Merino wool and you're complaining about and you had 100% Merino wool, dude, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You got to take care of it. But if you get those 90-10 or whatever, that's probably your better bet.
Yeah.
For stuff that'll last longer.
Actually, I think that's where I got my Merino wool socks. I got two pairs of them. I think it was like $45 for both pair, which seems expensive, but what they do for you, it's not expensive at the end of the day. You know, when your feet are comfortable and warm and dry on the inside, not, you know, that's everything.
Yeah, I think I got mine off of Amazon. I had like four pair. I don't remember how much I paid from Icebreaker.
Mm.
So I just went for the cheap ones. It said 100%, not 100%, but it was the combination wool and stuff. And I've been wearing those. I told you about my boots. Like Dan said, they get tore up from rubber boots and really tear up.
Yeah, yeah.
From all that. But, all right, Dan, you got anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm excited for this weekend. I'm looking forward to the closing ceremonies, what we'll call it, and getting around family and seeing the other guys from the other camps. It's going to be a good time, man. It traditionally is, and I'm looking forward to it. So,
yeah, but hopefully get some rounds down range and some meat. So
now get that new 243 barking, you know. That's so. But hey, I mean, you know, closing it out here, we want to thank everybody for listening. You know, hit that like button, subscribe. We truly appreciate everything. Thank you so much.
Yep. And we'll see you next time.
Take care.